The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
We must reach the church before the ceremony is done, and it has recruited another soldier to his army of the plague.
Plague?
Okashnik bring disease. He bring plague. He bring the Black Death. Only those who bear his mark are immune to it. They are his beasts.
The bayous of Louisiana, steeped in magic and the supernatural, are the new epicenter of a dark, age-old evil. Here, the horrors of a long-lost world are being resurrected into a living nightmare, unleashing a pestilence that may destroy hybrid and human alike.
A virulent disease is sweeping through my territories. If it spreads outward with our diminished autoimmune systems and this treatment facility in ruins, the Nine Barons will perish. We of the hybrid dynasty are doomed if we do not seek outside aid. If necessary, we must circumvent the oligarchy altogether and find other allies.
It's the Black Death. Sure enough.
You've got the plague.
All of us have it. But it won't kill us.
Why not?
Ukashnik kissed us. Immunized us.
You want to explain me? Is that it? And therefore diminish what I am? Or what you fear me to be?
And what is that?
A vampire.
He is Ukashnik, a creature who has never died. He woos all the darkness within the human soul like a lover. He is the king of the shadowy hordes that revel among the tombs of the ancient dead when night veils the swamps and the rats crawl among the offal. Those he kisses live forevermore in the darkness of the spirit.
Kiss me and live forever.
Cain, Grant, and Bridget Baptiste join with a voodoo priestess to battle primordial fear and destroy one of the most ancient of evils in Outlanders number 13, Shadow Scourge. Now in graphic audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by James Konacek, Tim Carlin, Dolores King Williams, Richard Rowan, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Terrence Aislefort, Andy Clements, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Thomas Penny, Nanette Savard, Christopher Graybill, Karen Carbone, and Mort Shelby. The Last Gunfighter, number one. The Drifter.
Boy, I strongly advise you not to pull on me.
It seemed to those in the ballroom there was not only a great weariness to the man's voice, but also a great sadness. Some of the spectators wondered about that. A few thought they knew why the sadness was there. Outside, the early spring winds chilled the late afternoon.
Well, you're nothing but a damned old washed-up piece of coyote crap.
Old is right, Frank thought, in body and soul.
And you're a coward, too!
The older man smiled, but his eyes turned chilly.
Boy, you should really learn to watch your mouth.
You're gonna make me do that, you old has-been.
I'd rather not have to do that, boy. Besides, that's something your mother and father should have taught you.
I never paid no mind to what they said.
Obviously.
Huh? Oh man, you talk funny, you know that? You try to insult me or something?
Not at all, boy. Just agreeing with you.
I don't like you, old man. I mean, I don't like you at all. I think you're all talk and no do. And I don't believe all them stories about you neither. I don't think you killed no 20 or 30 men.
I haven't.
I knowed it.
Closer to 40.
You're a damn liar.
Boy, go home. Leave me alone.
Nah, I'm gonna make you pull on me, Morgan. Then I'm gonna shoot you in the belly so I can stand right here and watch you beg and cry and holler like a whip pup till you die. That's what I'm gonna do.
Is that really Frank Morgan?
That's him. I thought he was a lot older.
Enough talk, old man. Grab iron, you old buffalo fart.
Frank Morgan did not move. He stood and watched the much younger man.
If you want a shooting, boy, you're gonna have to start it.
Then I will, by God. You think I won't?
I hope you don't, kid.
I ain't no kid.
Pardon me?
I'm known around here as Snake.
There is a certain resemblance.
What?
I was just agreeing with you.
You're gonna die, Morgan!
We all die, kid. Some long before their time. And I'm afraid you're about to prove me right.
Go to hell!
Morgan shot him before the kid could even clear leather. Shot him two times, the shots so close together they sounded as one, leaving two holes in the center of the kid's chest.
Good God almighty!
He's as fast as he ever was.
You know Morgan?
I seen him once back in 74, I think it was. He shot them two Burris brothers.
It was now April 1888.
I thought all that talk about you was bullshit.
Blood leaked from the kid's mouth.
I wish it was.
Frank turned away from the bloody scene and stepped up to the bar.
Whiskey, please.
I thought you only drink coffee, Mr. Morgan.
Occasionally, I'll take a drink of hard liquor.
Yes, sir. Mr. Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff and his deputies will be here shortly. Gunplay's not looked on with favor in this town.
In other words, get out of town.
It was just a friendly suggestion. No offense meant.
I know. None taken. Thank you.
Same old story. Different piano player. Same song.
Kid's dead. Reckon I ought to get the undertaker?
Not yet. Frank cut his eyes as three men stepped into the saloon. The sheriff and two of his deputies. The two deputies were carrying greeners, sawed-off double-barreled shotguns. No one with any sense wanted to take a chance when facing Frank Morgan. Frank was standing alone at the bar, slowly taking tiny sips from his glass of whiskey.
Frank Morgan.
Do I know you, Sheriff? I don't recall ever meeting you.
I know you from dime novels, Morgan.
I see.
Them writers want to make you a hero, but I know you for what you really are.
What am I, Sheriff?
A damn kill-crazy outlaw.
I never stole a thing in my life, Sheriff.
You say.
That's right, Sheriff. I say.
The deputies raised the shotguns.
Relax, boys. You'll get no trouble from me.
You just can't keep that pistol in leather, can you, Morgan?
I was pushed into this fight, Sheriff. Ask anyone here.
I expect that's so, Morgan. The kid was a troublemaker, for a fact.
And now?
You finish your drink and get out of town.
I got a very tired horse, Sheriff, with a loose shoe. He's at the livery now. You don't like me, that's all right. But my horse has done nothing to you.
All right, Morgan. You can stay in the stable with your horse. Get that shoe fixed first thing come the morning, and then get gone from here.
Thank you. How about something to eat?
Get you some crackers and a pickle from the store across the street. That'll have to do you.
Crackers and a pickle. Well, I've eaten worse.
Understood, Morgan?
Perfectly, Sheriff.
Some of you men get the kid over to the undertaker. Tell him he can have whatever's in the kid's pockets for his fee.
Them guns of his'n too?
The guns too.
Frank turned back to the bar and slowly sipped his drink.
Something on your mind, Sheriff?
What's your tally now, Morgan? 100? 150 dead by your gun?
No, Sheriff. Not nearly that many. The kid there was the first man to brace me in several years.
How do you manage that, Morgan?
I stayed away from people. Mostly rode to Lonesome.
What made you stop here?
My horse. And I needed supplies. I lost my pack horse and supplies to some damn renegade young Indians last week. Down south of here.
I heard. Got a wire from a sheriff friend of mine down that way. A posse went after those young bucks and cornered them. Killed them all.
They got what they deserved. That was a good horse they killed.
Wilson at the livery's got a good pack horse he'd like to sell, if you've got the money. I don't think he wants much for him.
I've got some money.
I'll amble over there and drop a word on him to let you have the horse for his lowest price. Then you get supplies and ride on.
Thanks, Sheriff.
The swamper mopped up the blood on the floor and sprinkled sawdust over the spot. The saloon settled down to cards and low talk. The excitement was over. Killings were rare in the town, but nobody really liked Snake, a smart-aleck, troublemaking, now-dead kid. He would not be missed. Frank Morgan pulled out early the next morning, after provisioning up at the general store. The man at the livery tossed in a pack saddle for a couple of dollars. Frank bought supplies, lashed them down, and pulled out before most of the town citizens emptied their chamber pots. Frank took it easy that morning, stopping often just to look around. It was years since he last passed through this part of New Mexico territory, and things changed somewhat. Hell of a lot more people, for one thing. Seemed to be settlers nearly everywhere he looked. For his nooning, Frank settled down in the shade by a little fast-running mountain creek and ate him a sandwich the lady at the general store kindly enough fixed for him, for a dime. Frank still wondered about the change in attitude of the local sheriff the day before. Some law dogs could be real bastards. Others were fairly decent sorts once you got past all the bluster. But it was many a year since any badge-toter got too lippy with Frank Morgan. One tried to shove Frank around down in Texas, back around 75, he thought it was. Wasn't any gunplay involved that day, but Frank sure cleaned the loudmouthed plow with his fists. Frank ate his sandwich, then rested for a time while his horses grazed. Then he stood. Felt good. Frank was just a shade over 6 feet, lean-hipped, broad-shouldered, with smooth, natural musculature. At 45 years old, Frank was still a powerful man. Not the boss he used to be, but close enough. His thick hair was dark brown, graying now at the temples. Pale gray eyes. Frank wore a .45 Colt Peacemaker, right side, low and tied down. He carried another Colt Peacemaker in his saddlebags. A Winchester rifle was stuck down in a saddle boot. On the left side of his belt, he carried a long-bladed knife in a sheath. He occasionally used that knife to shave with. He was as handy with it as he was with a pistol. Frank reluctantly left the peaceful setting of the shaded creek and rode on slowly toward the north. He did not have a specific destination in mind. He was just rambling. Frank worked the winter in a line shack, looking after a rancher's cattle in a section of the high country. He still carried most of his winter wages, along with a dream. A small spread of his own in a quiet little valley with good graze and water. He occasionally opened a picture book in his mind and gazed at the dream, but the mental pages were slightly torn and somewhat tattered now. Twice, Frank came close to having a little spread. Both times, his past caught up with him. The local citizens froze him out. Nobody wanted the West's most notorious gunfighter as a neighbor. Frank let part of his mind wander some as he rode. The other part remained vigilant. For the most part, Indian trouble was over. The Wild West was settling down. Bands of outlaws and brigands still roamed the West, though, robbing banks and rustling cattle. In the northern part of New Mexico, it was the gangs of Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen causing most of the trouble. Ned Pine and Vic Van Bergen started their careers in crime when just young boys. Both turned into vicious killers. Their gangs numbered about 20 men each, more from time to time, less at others, and they were not hesitant to tackle entire small towns in their wild and so far unstoppable pursuit of money and women, in that order. Frank Morgan knew both men, and they hated him. Both were known to go into wild outbursts of anger at just the mention of his name. Frank, at separate times, backed each of the outlaw leaders down and made them eat crow in front of witnesses. They were gutsy men, but they weren't stupid men. Neither one was about to draw on Frank Morgan. There were several names in the West that caused brave men to sit down and shut up. Smoke Jensen, Falcon McAllister, Louis Longmont, and Frank Morgan were the top four still living. Frank Morgan's life as a gunfighter began in his mid-teens working as a hand on a ranch in Texas. One of the punchers made Frank's life miserable for several months by bullying him whenever he got the chance, which was often. One day, Frank got enough of the cowboy's crap and hit him flush in the face with a piece of a broken single tree. When the puncher was able to see again and the swelling in his nose went down some, he swore to kill the boy. Young Frank Morgan had other plans. The puncher told Frank to get a gun, because the next time he saw him, he was going to send him to his maker. Frank had an old piece of a pistol he practiced with now and then when he got the money to buy ammunition. It was 1860 and times were hard, money scarce. That day, almost 30 years back, was still vivid in Frank's mind. He was so scared he puked up his breakfast of grits and coffee. Then he stepped out of the bunkhouse to meet his challenger, pistol in hand. There was no fast draw involved. That would come a few years later.
Asshole!
The bullet howling past Frank's head knocked out a good-sized splinter of wood from the rough door frame. Frank damn near peed his underwear. Young Frank acted out of pure instinct. Before the abusive puncher could fire again, Frank lifted and cocked his pistol. He shot the puncher in the center of his chest. The man stumbled back as the .36 caliber chunk of lead tore into his flesh.
You piece of turd!
He lifted and cocked his pistol. Frank shot him again, this time in the face, right between the eyes. Frank walked over and looked down at the dead man. The open, empty eyes stared back at him. He struggled to fight back sickness and managed to beat it. Frank turned away from the dead, staring eyes.
Luther had kin, boy. They'll be coming to avenge him. You best get yourself set for that day. Make some plans.
But I didn't start this. He did.
That don't make no difference, boy. I'll see you get your time and a little extra.
Am I leaving?
If you want to stay alive, son. I know Luther had four brothers. They're bad ones. They'll come looking for you.
They live close?
About a day's ride from here. And they gotta be notified. So you get your gear rolled up, son, and get ready to ride. I'll go see the boss.
I'm right here. I was having my morning time in the privy. Well, he was a good hand, but deep down, just like his worthless brothers, no damn good. You kill him, boy?
Yes, sir.
Well, Luther ain't gonna be missed by many. Only his sorry-ass brothers, I reckon. You gotta go, boy. Sorry, that's the way it has to be, for your sake. You get your personals together and come over to the house. You got time coming. I'll see you get some extra.
I ain't even got a horse to call my own, Mr. Phillips. Or a saddle.
You will. Get moving, son. I'll see you in a little while.
Frank rode out an hour later. He had his month's wages, $12, and $20 extra Mr. Phillips gave him. He had another $25 saved over his time at the ranch. Frank felt sort of rich. The foreman picked out a strong mount for Frank, threw on a saddle and saddlebags, and Mrs. Phillips fixed him a sack of food. The other hands gathered around to wish him farewell.
You done the world a favor, Frankie. I never did like that sorry bastard. Here you go.
The hand held out Luther's guns.
You throw away that old rust pot you've been toting around and take these. You earned them. You'll probably damn sure need them.
What do you mean, Tom?
Frankie, Luther was a bad one. He killed four or five men we know of with a pistol. He's got himself a reputation as a gunman. There'll be some who'll come looking to test you.
Test me?
Call you out, boy. You're the man who killed Luther Biggs. There'll be some looking to kill you. Stay ready.
I don't want no reputation like that.
Your druthers don't cut no ice now, boy. You got the name of a gunman. Now, like it or not, you've got to live with it.
Frank drifted for a couple of months, clear out of Texas and up into Oklahoma territory. He hooked up with two more young men about his age, and they rode together. Their parents were dead, like Frank's, and they just plain didn't want to stay with brothers or sisters, as was the case with Frank. The story about the shootout between young Morgan and Luther Biggs spread. Frank never talked about it. He just wanted to forget it. But he knew he couldn't. Not completely. The war between the states was a few months away, the war talk getting hotter and hotter. One of the boys Frank was riding with believed in preserving the Union. Frank and the other boy were Southern born. If war did break out, they would fight for the South. The trio separated in Arkansas when they received word about the beginning of the hostilities between the North and the South. Frank joined up with a group of young men riding off to enlist in the Confederate Army. He never knew what happened to the other two boys. For the next 4 years, Frank fought for the Southern cause and matured into a grown man. He became hardened to the horrors of war. At war's end, Frank Morgan was a captain in the Confederate Army, commanding a company of cavalry. Rather than turn in his weapons, Frank headed west. On his way, he experimented with faster ways to get a pistol out of a holster. He designed a special holster made for him at a leather shop in southern Missouri. The holster was open, without a flap, and a leather thong slipped over the hammer, preventing the pistol from falling out when he was riding or doing physical activities on foot. Frank practiced pulling the pistol out of leather. He worked at it for at least an hour each day, drawing, cocking, and dry firing the weapon. The first time he tried the fast draw using live ammunition,
holy shit!
He almost shot himself in the foot. He practiced with much more care after that, figuring staying in the saddle with one foot in the stirrup might be a tad difficult. By the time Frank reached Colorado, his draw was perfected. He could draw and fire with amazing accuracy and unmatched speed. Colorado was where he carved his reputation in stone. He met up with the Biggs brothers, all four of them. Provisioning up in southeastern Colorado, he heard someone call his name.
Frank Morgan.
He turned to see a truly ugly man, the spitting image of Luther Biggs.
I reckon you'd be one of the Biggs brothers.
Frank placed his gunny sack of supplies on the counter.
You're damn right I am. And you're Frank Morgan. Me and my brother's been trailing you for weeks.
I got the feeling somebody was dogging my back trail. Never could catch sight of you.
Our older brother, Billy Jeff, run across the man who knowed you. I disremember his name. That don't matter. He said you come out of the war all right and was heading up to the northwest. Told us what kind of horse you was riding and what you looked like now you was all growed up. But here and now is where you're growing stops, Morgan.
Take it outside, boys. Don't shoot up my place. Getting supplies out here is hard enough without this crap.
Shut up, ribbon clerk.
Biggs' eyes widened when the store owner lifted a double-barreled shotgun and eared both hammers back.
I said take it outside.
Now don't get all goosey, mister. We'll take it outside.
You do that.
You coming, Morgan? Or does Yeller smell? I think I smell yeller all over you.
Don't worry about me, ugly Biggs. You go run along now. Get with your brothers, since it appears none of you have the courage to face me alone.
The storekeeper got himself a good chuckle out of that, and a very dirty look from Biggs.
Don't you fret none about that, Morgan. I'd take you apart with my bare hands right now, excepting that would displease my brothers. They want a piece of you, too. And what is this ugly crap?
You. Ugly. Oh, you're so damn ugly you could scare a bull back into its mother.
The veins in Big's neck bulged in scarcely controlled anger. Wilson balled his fists and took a step toward Morgan.
I'll spread you all over the front part of this store, mister. Now back out of here.
I'll be right behind you, ugly.
Son of a bitch!
Biggs backed out of the store and walked across the street to the saloon.
You want to head out the back and get clear of town, mister?
I would if I thought it would do any good. But you can bet they've got the back covered.
Well, you can't fight them all.
I don't see that I got a choice in the matter.
Frank patted the sack of supplies on the counter.
I'll be back for these.
If you say so.
I say so.
Frank looked at the shotgun the shopkeeper was holding. The man smiled and handed it across the counter.
Take it, mister. I don't know you, but I sure don't like that fella who was bracing you.
Thanks. I'll return it in good shape.
Frank stepped to the front door, paused, then turned around and headed toward the rear of the store. The shopkeeper walked around the counter, closed and locked the front door, hanging up the closed sign. At the closed back door, Frank paused. A rifle blasted from the open door of the outhouse, and Frank gave the comfort station both barrels of the greener. The double blast of buckshot almost tore the shooter in two. The Biggs brother took both loads in the belly and chest, and the bloody, suddenly dead mess fell forward out of the outhouse and into the dirt. Another Biggs brother came into view, a part of him at least, his big butt.
Oh, Lordy! Oh, I'm hit, boys!
Where are you hit, Bobby?
Oh, in the ass! My ass is on fire, boys! Oh, God, it hurts!
In the ass? That ain't dignified!
Oh, the hell we dignified! I'm hurt, boys!
Hang on, Bobby. We'll get Morgan and cool your butt.
You killed that no-cow Billy Jeff! Oh, God! My honey's aflame!
Can you see him, Wilson?
No, but he's down yonder across the street from the livery. I know that.
Yeah, well, I know that better than you do. I got to lead my ass to prove it. Oh, God damn it. I ain't had such agony in all my born days.
You think this is funny? Damn you all to hellfires!
Morgan ran back up past the outhouse and the mangled body of Wells Biggs. He picked up the guns from Wells and shoved them behind his gun belt. Frank landed right across the wide street from Wilson Biggs. He bolstered his own pistol and, using the guns taken from the dead man, emptied them into the shed where Wilson was hiding. Wilson staggered out, his chest and belly blood-soaked. He did not move.
Wilson! Did you get him, Wilson?
No, he didn't. Your brother's dead.
Damn you! Step out into the street and face me, you sorry son.
And have your butt-shot brother shoot me? I think not.
Bobby! You hold your fire and let me settle this here affair. You hear me, boy?
I hear you, Billy Jeff. You sure you want it this way?
I'm sure. You hear all that, Morgan?
I hear it, but I don't believe it. You Biggs boys are all a pack of liars. Why should I trust you?
Damn you, Morgan. I give my word. I don't go back on my word, not never.
Step out then, Billy Jeff.
I'm a-coming out, Morgan. My gun's holstered. Is yours?
I'm coming out too, goddammit. Let's see if he's got the courage to face the both of us.
Bring your bleeding butt on, Biggs. If all your courage hasn't leaked out of your ass, that is.
He checked to see his own pistol was loaded up full, then slipped it into leather, working it in and out several times to ensure a smooth draw.
You son of a bitch, Morgan! I'm gonna kill you and then shove my pistol up your ass and empty it! You can't kill a fucking Biggs and get away with it!
Frank walked up to the mouth of the alley and stepped out to the edge of the street. Bobby stopped cussing.
Step out into the center of the street, Morgan, and face the man who's about to kill you.
The residents of the tiny town gathered along the edge of the street to watch the fight. Some fixed sandwiches, others held crackers or a pickle. This was exciting. Not much ever happened in the tiny, nameless village.
Make your play, Biggs.
Billy Jeff fumbled at his gun, and Frank let him clear leather before he pulled and fired, all in one very smooth, clean movement. The bullet struck Billy Jeff in the belly and knocked him down in the dirt. Frank bolstered and waited. He smiled at Bobby Biggs.
Son of a bitch!
Bobby groped for his pistol that was stuck behind his wide belt.
Oh,
Bobby stretched out on the street and was still. The bullet shattered his heart. Frank never knew what made him do it, but on that day, he twirled his pistol a couple of times before sliding it back into leather. He did it smoothly, effortlessly, and with a certain amount of flair.
Mommy, did you see that? Golly!
I never seen no one jerk a pistol like that.
He sure got it out in a hurry, and a damn fancy way of bolstering that thing, too.
Frank was certainly not the first to utilize a fast draw, but he was one of the first, along with Jamie McAllister and an East Texas gun hand whose name history forgot. Frank looked over at the crowd to his left.
This town got an undertaker?
No, we ain't even got a minister or a schoolmarm.
We just get the bodies in the ground as soon as we can, unless it's wintertime. Then we put them in a shed where they'll freeze and keep pretty well till the ground thaws and we can dig a hole.
Yeah, they ain't real pretty to look at after a time, but they don't smell too bad.
If you don't stay around them too long.
You can have their gear and guns for burying these men, and whatever money they have. Deal?
Deal? Sounds pretty good to me. Hey, they had some fine horses. Now, the horses is included, right?
Sure.
I hope they ain't stolen. Say, I heard them call you Morgan. You got a first name?
Frank.
You're just passing through, Frank?
Just stopping in town long enough to pick up a few supplies.
All right, well, I reckon we'd better get these bodies gathered up and planted.
I'll help.
Well, I'll get the horses. I got a bad back, you know. Can't handle no shovel.
Sure you do, Otis. Right.
Frank turned and walked away, back to the store to get his supplies and return the shotgun to the man.
Hell of a show out there, Mr. Morgan.
Not one I wanted the leading role in, though.
I suppose not. Where do you go from here?
Just drifting.
Back from the war?
Yeah. My side lost.
We all lost in that mess.
I reckon so. Thanks, mister.
Take care, Mr. Morgan.
Frank rode out, heading toward the northwest, his growing reputation right behind him. Frank rode north and tried to escape old memories. But there were too many memories. Too many bloody shootouts, too many killings, too many easy women with powder and paint on their faces and shrill laughter Frank could still hear in his dreams. And there was that one special woman. Her name was Vivian. Frank met her in Denver early in 66. She captured him with her charm and beauty. Frank was a very handsome young man, and Viv was equally smitten by him. She was the daughter of a businessman and lay preacher. Frank was working at the time on a ranch in the area and doing his best to stay out of any gun trouble. Theirs was a whirlwind courtship, and they were married just a few months after meeting. Viv's father did not like Frank. He made no attempt to hide that dislike. But after the wedding, Frank felt there was little Viv's father could do except try to make the best of it. Frank was wrong. 6 months after their marriage, Frank found himself facing a drifter hunting trouble.
I heard about you, Morgan. I think it's all balderdash.
Think what you want to think. I have no quarrel with you.
You do now.
There were no witnesses to the affair. The drifter braced Frank on a lonesome stretch of range miles from town. Frank was resting after a morning of brush-popping cattle out of a huge thicket. He was tired, and so was his horse.
How'd you know I was working out here?
I heard in town. I asked about you.
No one in town knew.
You calling me a liar?
This isn't adding up, friend.
I ain't your friend, Morgan. I come to kill you. That's what I aim to do.
Who paid you to brace me?
You'd better make your mind up to stand and deliver, Morgan. Because if you don't, I'm gonna gut shoot you and leave you out here so the crows and buzzards can eat your eyes.
That ain't gonna happen, friend. Now back off and right out of here.
I keep telling you, Morgan, I ain't your friend.
Tell me who paid you to do this madness.
On the count of three, you better hook and draw, Morgan. One.
Don't do this, friend.
Two.
I don't want to kill you.
Three!
The drifter never even cleared leather. He stared at Frank for a couple of seconds, then slumped to his knees.
Who paid you to do this?
Damn, but you're quick. I heard you was mighty fast, but
I just didn't believe it.
Who paid you?
Frank persisted, hoping the name would not be the one he suspected. But it was.
Henson. Preacher Henson.
Vivian's father. Frank turned the man over. He was still breathing.
How much did he pay you to brace me?
$500.
The drifter's eyes began losing their brightness.
You have the money on you?
Half of it. Get the other half when you're dead.
The drifter's head lolled to one side.
Talk to me. Damn you.
But the drifter was past speaking. The drifter was dead.
Dear father-in-law, I knew you disliked me. I didn't know you hated me to death.
Frank went through the drifter's pockets, then loaded the man's body across his saddle and lashed him down. Leading the skittish horse, who didn't like the smell of blood, Frank rode into the nearest town and up to the marshal's office. The much smaller town was miles closer than the fast-growing town of Denver. Frank explained what happened, sort of, leaving out who hired the drifter and why.
Any reason why this man would want to kill you, Morgan?
No, I don't have any idea. I've never seen him before. As you can tell by looking at me, and smelling me, I suppose, I've been working cattle most of the day.
Well, now that you mention it. Well, all right, Morgan. Did you go through the man's pockets?
Yes, I did, trying to find some identification. I didn't find any papers, but he had $50 on him. The money is in his front pants pocket.
Frank took $200 and left $50 to bury the drifter and throw off suspicion. The marshal did not question Frank further on the shooting.
We'll get him planted, Frank. Well, thanks for bringing in the body. Most people would have just left him.
Frank rode back home, arriving late that night. He did not tell Viv about the shooting. How could he? She wouldn't have believed him. He spent a restless night, wondering how to best handle the wild hate her father felt for him. The next day, he went to see his father-in-law. Frank tossed the $200 on the man's desk.
There's your blood money, Henson. I left $50 in the man's pockets to bury him.
The successful businessman, lay preacher, looked up from his desk. The hatred in the man's eyes staggered Frank.
You filth. You worthless gunman. Oh, I know all about you, Morgan. You're a killer for hire.
That's a lie, Mr. Henson. I've killed men. I won't deny it. But it was in self-defense, not for hire.
You're a liar. And you're not worthy to walk on the same side of the street as my daughter. You're a hired killer, a gunman, fit only for the fires of perdition. And you always will be.
Frank stared at the man in silence for a moment.
I'm gonna prove you wrong, Mr. Henson.
No. No, you won't. You can't. I've had detectives tracing you all the way back to your miserable, hard-scrabble beginnings, you white trash. And I know all about the rape charges brought against you in Texas.
Rape? What charges? There are no rape charges. There never have been any.
Henson smiled cruelly at Morgan. His eyes glinted with malevolence.
There will be when my men get through doing their reports.
Frank got it then. Viv's father was paying detectives to write false reports. He was speechless.
Leave. Leave on your own, and I won't use those reports against you. I give you my word on that. Just settle up and ride away.
Leave? Vivian is my wife. I vowed to spend my life with her.
What do you know of vows? You're a damned rake. That's all you've ever been. I'll destroy your marriage, Morgan. I'll make it my life's work. I promise you that.
Frank started to speak, and Henson held up his hand.
Don't bother begging, you trash. Leave. Get out. Get out of my office, get out of my town, and get out of my daughter's life. Leave before my detectives return and I have the sheriff place you under arrest.
I'll tell Viv about this.
You go right ahead. I'll just tell her I knew all about it and was trying to protect her. We'll see who she will believe. Me, naturally.
I can beat the charges.
No, you can't. I'll see you tried, convicted, and carried away in chains just like the wild animal you are. My detectives found ladies. who will testify against you, and they will be believed.
Frank was boxed and knew it. Henson had wealth, power, position, and could very easily destroy him.
You'll take care of Vivian.
Of course! She'll never want for anything. You're making a very wise decision, Morgan. Do you need money? Within reason, of course.
I wouldn't take a dime from you. You self-righteous, sanctimonious, scurvy son of a bitch. You can try to control Vivian. You can try to control the world. You'll still wind up food for maggots. Enjoy that view from hell.
Get out! Get out of town right now! Don't go home, don't see Vivian. Just get on your horse and ride out of here!
Frank almost lost it. He balled his big hard hands into fists and came very close to tearing his father-in-law's head off his shoulders. Henson saw what was about to happen and paled in fright. But at the last possible second, Frank backed off. Frank turned and walked out of the office. Henson looked down at his trembling hands, willing them to cease their shaking. After a moment, he rose from his chair and got his hat. He just had time to go get his daughter and escort her to the doctor's office. Vivian Morgan was pregnant.
Come on. Put the memories away. Close that old door.
But he couldn't. Even though it was some 20 years since he pulled out of Denver, 20 years since he last saw Vivian, the memories were strong. The image of her face burned into his brain. Frank heard little bits of gossip about Henson. The man became a millionaire through land deals in and around Denver, and a powerful voice in his church. He sent his daughter, Vivian, back east to live with family. She got married there. Somehow her father got her marriage to Frank annulled. She had a child by her second husband. Vivian and her husband returned to Denver to take over her father's business when Henson's health began to fail. By that time, Frank learned, the boy was in college somewhere back east. Occasionally, Frank ran across a week's or month's old Denver newspaper and read it. Sometimes there was something in there about Vivian Browning, and Frank would wonder what she looked like now. For a time, he would wander in what-ifs.
Oh, crap.
Frank made camp for the evening in the timber of the Sangre de Cristos, east and a little north of Santa Fe.
Put it out of your mind, Morgan. Put her out of your mind. She hasn't thought about you in years.
But as often as Frank thought that, he wondered if it was true. He couldn't forget her. Frank filled the coffee pot with water and set it on the fire to boil. He settled back with a book. Frank always made camp with at least an hour of daylight left him, so he could read. He was a well-read, self-educated man. There were always a couple of books in his saddlebags. History, government, sometimes poetry. On this day, he dug out a book by John Milton. He bought the book weeks back from a traveling salesman. While Frank would be the first to admit sometimes he didn't know what the hell Milton was talking about, he enjoyed his writings. Frank read for a time from something titled Paradise Lost, but he was not so engrossed he did not know what was happening around him. The birds that were singing so gaily stopped, and the chattering squirrels were silent. Frank put his hand on the stock of his rifle and pulled it close to him. Whenever he made camp for the night, he levered a round into the chamber of his rifle. All he had to do was ear back the hammer and let her bang.
Easy, friend. I don't mean no harm.
Then why are you trying to slip up on me?
Because I know who you are and how quick you are on the shoot, that's why.
Fair enough. Come on into the camp.
Let me get my horses, all right?
Bring them in.
The man looked to be in his 60s. He carried a rifle and wore a pistol at his side. He carefully propped his rifle against a tree and then saw to his animals. He joined Frank by the small campfire.
If you ain't got no coffee, I got some in my gear.
I have coffee. Waiting for the water to boil. It's on your mind.
Company for the evening, that's all. If you don't mind.
Not at all. I'm Frank Morgan.
Jess McCready. I know who you are.
Be ready in a minute, Jess. What are you doing out here in the big lonesome?
Getting away from people, mostly.
The older man sniffed at the heady aroma of coffee brewing and smiled.
Oh, I do like my coffee, Mr. Morgan.
Frank, just Frank.
Thank you. Frank it is.
Getting a little crowded for you, Jess?
A little bit. The territory's filling up. Town's sprouting up everywhere you look. It's disgusting.
Frank smiled and dumped in some cold water to settle the grounds.
I have noticed a few more people, for a fact.
He got up and dug another cup out of his pack, then rummaged around and found the bacon and flour.
Stay for bacon and pan bread, Jess?
Oh, you betcha I will. I got some taters we can fry up and a couple of cans of peaches in my gear. I'll fetch them. We'll have us a regular feast.
Sounds good to me.
Frank watched the man out of the corner of his eye as he got the peaches and potatoes. He made no suspicious moves and sat back down and started peeling the potatoes. Jess grinned and held up an onion.
We'll slice this up and stick it with the taters. Gives them a good flavor.
Sure does. I forgot to get me some onions when I provisioned up last stop.
Frank, I ain't trying to meddle in your business. Believe me, I ain't. But are you by any chance heading up toward Barnwell's Crossing?
Frank stopped his slicing of bacon to look at the man.
Never heard of the place.
Well, it's called the Crossing, usually.
Still never heard of it. What about it?
There was a silver strike there about 3 years ago. Big one. Millions of dollars was taken out of them mines. But it was short-lived. Mines are about played out now.
So? I never mined for gold or silver.
Ned Pine and Vic Van Bergen drift in and out of there from time to time.
That got Frank's attention.
Well, I see. You know about the bad feeling between Ned and Vic and me, huh?
Yep. I was there that time you made Vic back down. I know he swore to kill you, and so's Ned.
Those are old threats, Jess.
But still holding true, Frank. Point is, one of the big company mines hit another strike. Got tons of damn near pure silver out and melted down. They're waiting to transport the bars out. And the Pine and Van Bergen gangs are waiting for them to try it.
Why don't they hire some people to guard the shipment?
Don't nobody want the job. Ned and Vic done passed the word.
I still don't see what that has to do with me, Jess.
Well, I'll tell you. The mining company is the Henson Mine Corporation. It's owned by Mrs. Vivian Browning, old man Henson's daughter.
The next morning, Jess headed south and Frank headed north, toward Barnwell's Crossing. When Frank questioned Jess, the older man told him he learned about Frank's marriage years back from a pal of his who worked for a man in Denver who knew Henson. Henson, Jess said, was not well-liked. He was ruthless in his business dealings, and few mourned his passing some years back. Jess told him Barnwell's Crossing was a dying town, although it still had a couple of hundred people eking out a living there. The silver was just about played. Frank didn't know how he would handle matters once he got to the crossing. He sure didn't know how he would react if he came face to face with Vivian. He wondered if Vivian told her husband about him. Probably. Frank thought a marriage built on a lie would not last. Jess gave him directions on how to get to Barnwell's Crossing. After listening to the twisted route, Frank commented it sure seemed to be in a very isolated section of the territory, not in an area he was at all familiar with. Frank recalled Jess's parting words.
Wait until you get there. You'll think you've fallen off the earth into hell.
That bad, huh?
Worser. One way in, one way out.
Perfect setting for Pine and Van Bergen.
You betcha.
A week of hard riding after leaving the company of Jess McCready, Frank reached a narrow, twisty road leading into the mountains. Miles later, at a crossroads, he saw a crossing sign. A crudely painted arrow pointed off toward the west. The road was literally cut out of the mountains in some spots, and some of the drop-offs were hundreds of feet straight down. Frank remembered some long-ago campfire talk about the town as he rode. He remembered it now. The town was established some 35 years back. Frank couldn't recall the original name. The Apaches raided the tiny town and burned it to the ground. It was rebuilt, and the Apaches raided and burned it once more. It sprung to life again, Frank guessed, when silver was found. Frank didn't know where the name Barnwell came from unless it belonged to the man who hit the latest strike of silver. After he rode for several miles on the twisty road, the town came into view. A dozen or so stores were closed and boarded up. A hotel, a large general store, a saloon, a doctor's office, a barbershop slash undertaker's, a livery, and several other false front stores appeared open. On all sides of the town, the hillsides were dotted with mine entrances and narrow roads, all leading down to the town and the mill. Frank stared at the mill for a moment. It was still operating. Frank rode into town, looking at the homes on either side as he rode. Some were very nice. Others were no more than shacks thrown together. There were tents of varying sizes scattered among the houses and shacks. No one paid the lone rider the slightest bit of attention as he rode slowly up to the livery and swung wearily down from the saddle. He wanted a hot bath, a shave, and a haircut, and some clean clothing. His shirt and jeans were stiff with the dust and dirt from days of traveling.
Take care of my horses.
Yes, sir. Rub them down, curry, and feed?
Yeah.
Frank looked across the street. The livery was the last operating business at this end of town. The reasonably nice houses across the street looked empty.
Any of those houses over there for rent?
All of them. See Mr. Willis at the general store and he'll fix you up.
The young man pointed.
That one's the best. It got a brand new privy just a few steps out back. And the man who just left installed a new hand pump right in the kitchen. It's nice.
Thanks. My gear be safe here, boy?
For a dollar, yeah, I can lock it up.
Frank smiled and gave him a couple of coins.
See that it is.
You bet, sir. I'll do it. What's your name?
Frank hesitated.
Logan.
Yes, sir, Mr. Logan.
Frank walked up to the general store and made arrangements to rent the house for a time, after making sure the place included a bed and a cook stove. While at the store, Frank bought some new clothes. Underwear, socks, breeches, shirts, and a suit coat. It fit reasonably well. He took his new purchases and walked over to the barber shop. There, he took a hot bath, shave, and a haircut, while his old clothes were washed and his new clothes pressed to get the wrinkles and creases out. He also got his hat blocked, as best the man could. Feeling like a new man, after washing away days of dirt and probably a few fleas, Frank walked the town's business district. The marshal's office was closed and locked. It showed signs of having been so for a long time.
I haven't had a marshal for several months now. Can't keep one.
Why?
They get shot.
That's one way to get rid of the law.
Frank stepped into the small apothecary shop.
Howdy. Got anything new in the way of headache powders?
You got a headache, mister?
No, but I might get one.
We don't have anything new here, but I heard of something coming from Germany. Supposed to be some sort of wonder.
Oh, what's it called?
Don't know. Big secret project by the Bayer Drug Company. It'll be available in a few years, so I'm told. I got some laudanum if you want it.
Maybe later. Thanks.
Frank walked on down the street, stepping carefully along the warped old boardwalk bearing signs of the Apache fires. He came to a cafe called the Silver Spoon and went inside for a bite. Frank ate the blue plate special, beef, beans, and a piece of pie. He lingered at the table for a few minutes, enjoying a pretty good cup of coffee and a cigarette, watching the people in the small town as they went about their business.
You working a claim here?
The cook leaned on the counter. There were only a handful of people in the cafe. It wasn't yet time for the supper crowd.
No, just passing through.
You sure look familiar to me. I know you from somewheres.
Could be.
Frank was sitting at a corner table, his back to a wall, as was his custom. He had a good view of much of the street and everyone in the cafe. A woman came up and whispered in the cook's ear. The cook's mouth dropped open. His eyes bugged out for a few seconds. He stared at Frank for a couple of heartbeats.
Good God! It really is him!
The woman, Frank assumed she was the waitress, looked over at him and smiled.
Remember me, Frank?
Can't say as I do. You want to warm up this coffee, please?
Sure.
The woman brought the pot over and filled his cup, then sat down uninvited across the table from Frank.
I was married to Jim Peters.
Frank paused in his sugarin' and stirrin'. His eyes narrowed briefly. Then he nodded his head.
I recall Jim Peters. He tried to backshoot me up in Kansas.
That's him. Coward right to the end. I left him a couple of years before that shooting. Moved to Dodge. He followed me. I still wouldn't have anything to do with him. You did me a favor by killing him.
Frank sipped his coffee and waited, sensing the woman was not finished.
That was 5 years ago, Frank. But the man who offered up $5,000 to see you dead is still alive, and the money is still up for your death, to anyone that's brave enough to go for it.
Frank set his cup down on the table.
I never knew anything about any $5,000 on my head.
The woman studied Frank's face for a moment.
You really don't, do you?
Nope.
He's a lawyer. Works for the Henson Enterprises. They own a mine here in Crossing. The biggest mine, Frank. No telling how many millions of dollars of silver was taken out of that mine. One more shipment to go and the mine closes.
But they can't ship it because of the Pine and Van Bergen gangs, right?
That's right, Frank. And then, here you come riding in, getting set to get all tangled up in something that doesn't really concern you.
It's a long story, miss.
It's still Peters. We were never divorced. Please call me Angie.
All right. Angie it is. And I assure you, it does concern me greatly.
Because of Mrs. Vivian L. Browning, Frank?
You know a lot, Angie. Question is, why?
Why do I know? I've owned cafes all over the West. People talk in cafes, as much or more as they do in saloons. And I am a real good listener.
I'll bet you are.
Frank returned her smile as he studied the woman. A good-looking woman. Not beautiful, but very, very attractive. Black hair, blue eyes, and a head-turning figure. Frank bet when Angie took a stroll, men looked, and wives got mad.
How many men do Pine and Van Bergen have?
No one knows for sure. 30 or 40 at least. Probably more than that.
Do any of them ever come into town?
Quite often. But never Pine or Van Bergen. The men who come in for supplies are not on any wanted list that anybody knows about.
Angie looked out the cafe window.
There are two members of the gang riding into town now.
Frank followed her eyes, watching as two rough-dressed men rode slowly up the main street.
I know them. They're related somehow. Cousins, I think. Both of them are wanted in Arkansas on murder charges. If this town had a marshal, he'd be $1,000 richer by arresting those two.
Frank smiled and pushed back his chair.
As a matter of fact, I could use $1,000 right now.
Frank, this isn't your fight. Don't get mixed up in this mess.
With a grim smile, Frank slipped the leather thong off the hammer of his pistol.
Watch me.